This is AmericasWebRadio.com.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Cool Project Show on America's Web Radio. I'm your host, Michelle Molyneux, and today we're going to do something a bit different. I believe one of our biggest and most significant projects is raising of our children. I have just finished reading an amazing book called 52 Ways to Connect with Your Smartphone Obsessed Kids, and I have a 10-year-old who's very much obsessed, and it's a great read. So I wanted to have the author on the show, Jonathan McKee. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Before we talk about your book, let's talk a little bit about yourself and your ministry and how you help equip youth workers and parents. How did that ministry come into existence?
Well, it actually came into existence by accident. I've been in youth ministry 25 years, and in my first decade of youth ministry, back in the 90s, wow, showing how old I am, I was looking for a lot of resources like everybody was. And internet was kind of a relatively new thing. And as we were kind of looking on, there was a lot of stuff for sale on the internet, but there wasn't a lot for free. And even though I wasn't finding a lot of stuff, I had like a file cabinet full of stuff that we'd been using. And so I literally dumped my file cabinet onto the internet, started a website that was called jonathansresources.com back in the day. And I was like, hey, anybody in youth ministry is, I'm sure, looking for some free help. Here's a bunch of stuff that I used that helped. And it was like free games and free training and free ideas and free anything that, you know, helped us connect with young people. And it kind of took off. And people were emailing me from all over the world saying, can we get more of this stuff? And I've been doing some training locally, but my training got bigger, and I started training more at conferences and more nationally, and then it grew to internationally. And after about 10 years of ministry, we kind of came to this part where we're like, okay, do we want to keep just focusing on the kids we're reaching, or we have this open door to now help a bunch of other people who are each working with kids, groups of kids. And at that point, we had literally, over 100,000 unique visitors per month coming to the website, asking for resources, asking for help. So we basically kind of switched our ministry from just focusing hands-on to how can we help people out on the front lines who are working hands-on with young people. And so we started a website called thesourceforyouthministry.com. We still get literally millions of users a year and coming for free resources, written a bunch of books, and we eventually, just a few years ago, started thesourceforparents.com, which is thesource4parents.com, and because basically anybody who's out in the front lines connecting with young people, we want to make their job easier and help them make those connections. And parents are a huge part of that. And me as a parent of three, although my kids are 18, 20, and 23 right now, my girls are back from college for the summer right now, so I actually have kids in the home now, even though I'm an empty nester. I realize what it's like and how hard it is to make those connections, especially in a world that where most of us are over-connected, staring at screens.
That's very true. They say you're only supposed to spend, an hour a day on the screen, but it's more like 8 hours for kids?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. The numbers with adults and kids are both actually not pretty. What we really have is over-connected adults trying to connect with over-connected kids. Most studies that show what adults are doing, adults are actually spending a little more screen time than young people. It's scary. Nielsen just had a sobering report, and it was a very conservative report, too, because there's people out there that show adults are spending anywhere up to 12 hours a day. Nielsen's most recent report, and they're pretty accurate, showed about 9 hours and 45 minutes a day of total entertainment media. That's not just screen time. That's if you add up TV, phone, music, everything, 9 hours and 45 minutes. Similar reports for young people are about 8 hours, 55 minutes for teenagers, 5 hours, 55 minutes for tweens, that 8 through 12-year-old. So adults are actually beating kids on screen time, especially on TV. Adults spend a lot more time on TV than young people.
You need to write another book on 52 ways to connect with your smartphone-obsessed parents.
Absolutely. It's true. Well, think about it. How many times have you been in a restaurant and you look around and you see the adult sitting there staring at their phone while the young kid is sitting there misbehaving, trying to get the adult's attention. Yeah, it's easy for us to kind of say, you know, oh, kids these days. And we've all experienced that as parents. I mean, my 18-year-old, I'll walk downstairs and she'll have a bunch of friends over. And sometimes I walk down and I think, oh, they're gone. And I walk in the room and they're all sitting there and there's like six, you know, teenagers sitting there staring at their phones. And I'm like, hey, you guys, you're right there. You could talk with each other, you know, but they're staring at their phones. And it's kind of, you know, it's there's actually like even kind of social rules that young people go by. I mean, on college campuses, there's the rule of three. And the rule of three is that if you're standing in a crowd of anything more than two people, so you got three, four people, it doesn't matter. If any two people are engaged in, you know, social interaction with each other, it's socially acceptable for that third person to stare at their phone. And that's just the way they've grown up. It's not even awkward. And it's funny, though, because when I talk at school assemblies about this kind of stuff and we talk about this issue with phones, you know, I'll be the first to admit, I'll say, hey, phones are great. I love this thing. You know, I mean, this what a great tool we have here. The problem is, you know, this great tool that we have that helps us connect with people outside of the room, it's sad when it starts to interfere with our connection with the people inside the room. And I'll sometimes joke about it at school assemblies and stuff, and you'll see people literally, you know, kids shoving their friends and saying, that's so you, you know. And kids are frustrated. As a matter of fact, Common Sense Media did another report recently where they asked adults and kids about obsession. They actually asked, as a matter of fact, on the front page of the sourceforparents.com right now, there's an article called Addicted, and in there it talks about how much time we spend on our devices, and these studies are crazy, like Common Sense's study. They asked young people and parents, how many of you guys are actually addicted to, you know, to your phones, or how many of you are obsessed with your phones? And 66% of parents said, oh, my young people definitely are. Well, you would have thought that the young people disagreed, but actually over 50% of teenagers said, yeah, no, I have a problem. I spend too much time on my phone.
It's also the games that they have on the phones. I find it's also very addictive for the kids, too.
Yeah, absolutely. With boys more than girls, not that girls are not gamers, but that one study that that we talk about, the Common Sense one, that is, it's Common Sense Media did a study back late 2015, how much time are young people spending on their devices, and it was the one that showed that teenagers spent 8 hours and 55 minutes per day. It was interesting. They divided by gender, by age, by everything. And, you know, young men spending easily an hour a day on video games. And but, you know, it's funny. And here's where parents, sometimes we tend to, our first reaction is, turn that thing off. And it's funny how sometimes we can use those moments. You know, as a matter of fact, in my book, 52 Ways to Connect with Your Smartphone Obsessed Kid, I suggested one of the methods I used with my son, who loved video games, was what I call two-player mode. It's the two-player connection. And that is, as a parent, instead of walking in and saying, get off that stupid game, instead, sit down, watch what he's playing. And cool sword, where'd you get that? Hey, can I try it? And I tell you, the times where I sat down and played with my son were some of the greatest times of interaction we had, because something about me entering his world, being there with him, all of a sudden he would start talking to me. He would literally be like, so, Dad, what's going on? What books are you writing? He would just, as we're sitting there chopping people up with our cool swords, you know, he would start talking and start having these conversations. So sometimes, you know, it's, you know, this isn't all about how can we get them to put their stupid device away so we can have conversations. Sometimes we can, you know, actually enter the world of technology and use that to connect with them.
What compelled you to come up with 52 ways to connect with your smartphone obsessed kids or kids? And I love the title. I think it's absolutely brilliant, because I'm sure there's even more than 52 ways. But what compelled you to come up with this book?
Well, you know, it's mainly because it is the issue, I think, for parents today. When I teach a parent workshop, I know that when I'm done, as parents come up and they ask me questions, they'll say, Jonathan, they'll always start their question with, okay, so I've got my daughter, she's 16, And then the next thing they'll tell me is they'll tell me about what device. They'll say, and she's got this phone. So what do I do when, you know, or they'll be like, my son, he's got this game that he, you know, and every question is about, you know, what about this app? Which apps are safe and this and that? And parents are just struggling with this whole, because we're all catching up. This is brand new for us. I mean, this is brand new for car companies. If you buy a car and then, you know, this year compared to 2 years ago, it's got new features with new thumb controls on the steering wheel to activate the voice activated this and that, because we're all just figuring out this thing day by day. And even car companies are going, okay, people are getting in wrecks because they're looking down at their phones. What if we created buttons on the steering wheel where, you know, so this is new for all of us. In 2012, America crossed the 50% mark for smartphone ownership. So pre-2012, the majority of us had dumb phones. You know, we had those phones that, you know, sure could text and we could call each other if we wanted. And young people were doing a ton of texting at that time. But now we all have this device in our pocket that, you know, has access to our entire entertainment media library. We can, you know, browse movies, watch, you know, we have access to Netflix and Hulu and everything right there on our phone. We have access to whatever music we want. We have access to all social media we want. If you have a question, Google it. I mean, it's all right there in our pockets. So it's becoming this distraction for many of us, even though it's this awesome tool. If you're sitting in a restaurant and there's a song you like and you hear it playing, you go, oh, what is that song? You whip out your phone, you hit Shazam, and next thing you know, you say, ah, Lionel Richie. It doesn't get better than that. You know, I mean, we love it, you know, because it is a great tool, but we become the tool when we're, you know, sitting there focused on this thing so much that, you know, we're ignoring our kids. You know, for most parents, this is a learning curve, and this is new technology. We're only in, you know, for a lot of us, year five or six of having this thing, and we're trying to figure out how can we use this thing as a great tool for connection, but not become a tool who doesn't connect with our kids.
So how long did it take you to write this this book?
Oh, man. My first book came out in... I haven't done this math. 2003. You'll have to do the math for me. 2003 was first book. It's 2016. I just submitted my 21st book to my publisher, so it's a little more. What's that? Like 1.3 something per year. You could sell a book a year, but it's been a little more than that. I probably was. I mean, it's funny, from start to finish, I'll propose it to a publisher, or the publisher will approach me and say, hey, here's a topic. This is one I brought to them. And I said, hey, here's a thing I keep hearing over and over again at the back table talking with parents. And this seems to be a felt need. You know, takes a process of a month or two for the publisher to say, oh, yeah, no, this is good. Let's do it. Let's run with it. I submit kind of an outline. Here's what I'm thinking of doing. Let's you know, give them a bunch of ideas, but let's also give them some questions they can use. They said, go with it. And I probably then... the actual writing process, probably 3 months, 4 months, maybe. But then, you know, I send it to them. They have editors. It goes back. So the whole process takes about a year. Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Well.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So coming up, we'll talk more with Jonathan and his 52 ways to connect with your smartphone assess kids. We'll be right back.
Obamacare is failing. We all know that, but you need to know why and what you can do to get us back on the right track. Visit us at ObamacareWatch.org. This is Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. Join us at ObamacareWatch.org.
Your auto love and investment demands the best, and for 45 years, Passport Transport has been meeting those demands. From manufacturers to the one-car collectors and all other facets of the auto industry and antique auto hobby. The first and the finest with unequaled service and peace of mind. Passport Transport, your auto transportation company. Contact PassportTransport.com with your need today. Passport Transport.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action from testifying to litigating to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show, and today we're talking with Jonathan McKee. He's a speaker, author, and founder of the nonprofit organization, The Source for Youth Ministry. Jonathan, one of the questions I actually wanted to ask you is how serious is the problem of smartphone obsession?
Oh, man. Well, as we're talking about, you know, just before there, you know, obviously it's a felt need. It's something that you observe even when you just see young people stare at their devices, parents stare at their devices. We also mentioned some of the surveys out there where, you know, parents, you know, see it as a problem. Over 50% of kids saw it as a problem, like, wow, I think I'm obsessed with this thing. There's even surveys out there that ask young people, like, you know, what they would, you know, what's their favorite thing, you know, if there was a fire in their house, what's the first thing they would grab kind of stuff. You know, literally about half of kids out there would actually choose internet access over a car. You know, I mean, this is, the smartphone is a huge draw for young people. They love it. It, when studying millennials, which is now pretty much 20-somethings, a lot of millennials are doing jobs, allow social media access, and they'll choose a job that allows that over salary. In other words, they'll if one job offers more money, but the other job offers social media access and kind of more of a chill atmosphere where you can do that and less money, they'll take the one with the social media access. So that way they don't have to sneak all day. You know, I mean, this is a huge priority for today's young people. Kids love their smartphones. So it's definitely a felt need where we're a lot in this world where people are staring at these screens so much. Screens of all different sizes, you know, phones, tablets, tablets, you know, big screens, small screens. And it's funny how the different ages like different screens. I mean, TV for a second. Let's talk about that. Young people love their TV. TV is actually a screen they actually spend quite a bit of time looking at. And you know, the definition of TV could vary because young people are now liking Netflix and Hulu, and they're spending sometimes a lot of their time in their room staring at their phone or their, you know, laptop or their tablet or the family tablet, whatever, but watching, you know, what you would call TV, you know, it's all semantics, because they're watching a show, whether it be, a show that they actually, you know, not like the good old days on rabbit ears, but it's the same show, but it's now just streaming. TV time is probably one of the, depending on the age group, it's still up there for one of the things that, you know, young people are spending a lot of time doing. Actually, music is way up there as well. Game time with guys is up there really as well. But when it comes to TV, adults clocking in more time, my age group, 40-somethings, we spend more time watching TV than teenagers. And the age group that spends the most time watching TV is my dad's age group because, you know, you got to get that NCIS and Dancing with the Stars. So they're spending far more time than any age group staring at that big screen on the wall, where young people are spending more time staring at small screens. So, yeah, it's an issue. You've got people staring at screens and not talking with each other. I mean, picture what this looks like in a typical home. You walk into a typical home, and, you know, without anybody knowing you were there, and if you were a fly on the wall looking, you'd probably see, you know, parents staring at the big screen on the wall while the teenager is staring at some smaller screen streaming some sort of media. The toddler's even, you know, flicking colored images across an iPad, and the dog's on the treadmill because no one will walk him. I mean, that's the typical house right now.
That's so very true. Yeah, and I think that's worldwide. It's not just North America.
No, it's across the pond.
Yeah. Now, if you were to narrow down the top three ways to connect with the smartphone obsessed kids, well, what would that be? I mean, you have 52, so that would be a difficult choice.
Yeah.
So what would be your top three? Yeah.
Well, it's cool because, you know, there's so many, and if somebody came up to me and said, okay, my kid's 12, what do I do? Or my kid's 17, or I've got a boy, or I've got a girl, I'd probably tell them different ones. You know, for me, one of the big ones that really worked well was the two-player mode with my son, because he was a big gamer, and that was huge. For my daughter, one that always worked super well, for my youngest daughter, because I have two daughters, she, you know, loved yogurt and that kind of fun stuff. So if we would even be going on like a lame errand, when we were done, I'd be like, hey, you want to stop by the yogurt shop? And she's like, yeah. And for us, you know, then she's got a yogurt in her hand, a spoon on the other hand, so that means her phone's in her pocket. And guess what? Mm-hmm. We would start talking, you know. A lot of parents tell me that some of the best ways are when they're putting their kid to bed at night and their kid just looks up from under the covers and is, you know, asks that question, Mom, you know, when you were my age, did you ever like a guy, but he never liked you back? And, you know, and all of a sudden that mom talks with her daughter and has that special moment for like 5 or 10 minutes. Parents tell me about that all the time. The funny thing is, as their kids get to be older and teenagers, we think, oh, well, they don't need to be tucked in anymore, so we don't do it. I'm actually in process of writing another book right now, just turned it in. As a matter of fact, it's going to come out January of next year, called If I Had a Parenting Do-Over. And I surveyed hundreds of parents and asked them, hey, if there's one thing you regret, if there's one thing you could do over again. And by far the number one answer, more than any other answer, was spending more time with my kids. And parents told me, even specific venues, I wish I would have kept putting my kid to bed. You know, I wish I would have kept going in and just, you know, because it was some of those moments that parents shared where even with their teenager, the phone was put away in a charger and they sat there and as they kind of tucked their kid into bed. And, of course, a lot of teenagers would be like, Mom, you don't need to tuck me into bed. But, you know, those parents who said, no, I'm going to go up and just kind of kiss you goodnight and would sit down on the side of the bed, you know, sometimes just one time out of 10, they would all of a sudden start talking. And they found that all of a sudden the phone's put away, the devices are put away, and two people were just sitting there talking. And a lot of us, we find these moments, in the United States in the summer, we just passed the 4th of July. It's amazing how one of the things I talk about in the book, one of the methods I liked, is a method I call Here's the Keys. And Here's the Keys isn't specifically just handing your kids keys, but in the United States, when a kid comes time to learn to drive, sometimes that's a big deal. It's like, can I drive? And if you take a kid that wants to drive, who's always wanted to drive, and you're like, hey, here's the keys, you drive. And that could be on the, you know, if you grew up on a farm and you finally let your kid drive that tractor, you know, all attention is on the tractor. It's like, whoa, I get to drive. And so whatever that moment is, I mean, in my house, we love movies, and we actually have a home theater that we made, and it's got all these complicated remotes and this and that. As my kids were growing up, I remember my son was always like, hey, can I do the remote? And being able to notice what is it that our kids like and handing them that. I talk about the 4th of July in America. You know, sometimes kids will be sitting there just staring at their phones when you're all out together looking at fireworks. And if families go out together and they buy a bunch of fireworks, sometimes looking at your son who's every year been like, oh, can I light it? Hand him the lighter and go, hey, why don't you be the lighter this year, you know? And all of a sudden now they've got something they're doing. You're handing them the keys, so to speak. And they're like, oh, boy, you know, I mean, and this obviously gets less and less as kids get older. You know, you ask your 17-year-old, do you want a light? They'll be like, no. So, you know, as parents, this is an ongoing thing where we're constantly looking
at
their world and things. Exactly, and find that thing that they're interested in, and you know, and that's why you know, one of the methods that's my favorites in the book is what I call the yes factor. The yes factor is, you know, as your kids get to be older and older, the time will become less and less that they'll actually come up and ask you to do something. But the fact is, our kids will every once in a while say, "Hey, Dad, you want to go get some fries or whatever?" You know, every once in a while that'll happen. And I told parents, when your kids are teenagers, I made a vow, and it was too late. It was when my daughter was a senior in high school. I just started to realize that every once in a while I was slammed, I was busy, and one of my kids would come up and be like, hey, Dad, can you do this? I'm like, I can't, I'm busy. And I just made a vow because I'd seen my other kids gone out of the house in college, and here I've got my one left in the house, and I realized my time is running out. And so I made a vow to myself. I didn't even tell anybody. When she asks me any opportunity to connect, I don't care how busy I am, I'm saying yes. I call that the yes factor. So I could be slammed, pile of work on my desk, deadlines, and my daughter would be like, hey, you know, I got to run to Walmart and buy some poster board for a project. Will you go with me? You know? And I'd be like, sure. Because where normally I'd be like, can't you buy a poster board by yourself? You know? Come on. You know? But I was like, no, let's do it. And then on the way back, I'd be like, hey, we're passing our favorite, you know, we're passing Big Spoon, our favorite yogurt shop, you know, swinging there. And it was moments like that where saying yes, which again was, you know, few and far between these opportunities to connect with our older kids who were always gone. So the yes factor, that was a big one. You know, like I said, yeah, 52 of them. And the funny, and the reason I put so many in a book is because all our kids are different. Their tastes differ, yeah. You know. So that's why there's so many different ones. But those are some, just a glimpse of some of the ones. Probably more than three, I don't know. But those are some of the ones that have worked for me.
You're right. Yeah, well, you know, I actually, because in your book you talked about memory lane and pulling out the old movies for the kids to watch. And I thought, you know, I would also say work with the kids in creating new memories for them and let them be the producers and the directors of creating new movies on their smartphones. So you're exploiting and using that smartphone to help them create new fun memories.
Well, young people love creating content, and it's amazing how now our kids are now amateur photographers, you know, for their Instagram. You know, they're amateur filmmakers for, you know, less than
YouTube.
10-second movie, less than 10-second movies, Vine, you know, or YouTube. Yeah, they're big ones, you know. And so, yeah, it is fun to what a great opportunity to take part in their lives and then ask them to use those skills sometimes, you know, say, hey, will you shoot this for us? And again, it's all about observing, because for one kid, that's going to work great, and the parents can say, oh, it worked awesome with my kid, and then we'll try it, and our kid will be like, duh, like, I'd want to do that, you know? And so all of a sudden, you're like, oh, man. And for another kid, it's going to be something totally different. But, yeah, looking for these kind of opportunities to see what it is. And for us to do that, it starts with us entering their world and noticing them. And sometimes that's as simple as if you're a parent and you're driving, a bunch of kids home, just be quiet and listen. And it's amazing what you can learn about your kids just listening. If you're, you know, carpooling and you're the driver, they'll forget you're up there. They'll start talking about stuff. And, man, I just tell you, if you just listen, you can learn a lot. Just tune in to what they're saying. As a matter of fact, sometimes your kid's friends will say something and you'll hear your kid go, shh, 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 shh. That's when you really got to listen. You know, you're like, oh, I think something was said there that they didn't want mom to know about. But yeah, no, we can learn a lot. And as we listen, we'll kind of learn, hey, you know what? Because I've asked parents and I'll say, enter their world. And they're like, I have no idea what my kid likes. Well, then I guess we got to start noticing then. Better start listening, because, you know, my guess is when you're talking with their friends, if we just listen, we'd probably hear a glimpse of, you know, and see a glimpse of what they like and what actually, you know, kind of excites them and what they're excited to talk about. Maybe we should try talking about those things.
Right. Do you, I know a lot of people say that we should be paying close attention to what the kids are doing with their smartphones, especially among, like, you know, when they're, you know, instant messaging each other, and some parents tend to, like, look over the shoulder to observe what they are saying. And part of me thinks that maybe an invasion of privacy or showing a lack of trust. What is your thought on that?
Yeah, it is, and I guess it depends. Is that something we want to attack right here? Do we want to attack that in our next section? Because that's a long question with a long answer, because you're right, a lot of parents are kind of deciding, do I spy? You know, do I watch them? Do I take these devices away? You know, some people call those the limiter parent. They limit, you know, the access to this stuff, and they've got spyware and all that kind of stuff on the kids' phones. Then there's the other parents that are the polar opposite. They're like, you know, you can't possibly keep out. You know, let them do whatever they want to do, and that's the other extreme.
Right.
Is either extreme the answer? That's a good question.
Yeah. That is a good question. So you know what? We'll talk about that in the next segment. So we'll be right back after these short messages from our sponsor when we're talking with Jonathan. We'll be right back.
45 years of experience is behind the most trusted name in auto transportation. Passport Transport, the first and finest today. That's why Passport Transport is the preferred auto transport for major auto manufacturers, concours, museums, tours, and collectors, and should be your choice from across the state to across the country. When you have the need, go to PassportTransport.com and enjoy the peace of mind referenced experience will give you. Passport Transport.
When four members of Congress all die within 4 months, each of their deaths appears to be from natural causes. But when mysterious messages begin to appear in the form of quotations from long-dead revolutionary heroes, one reporter sets out to prove the existence of a serial killer. His search discovers dark secrets and an assassin shielded by people who need the very services that only he can provide. The Sun Silas Rising, a novel by Doug Dahlgren, on Kindle or paperback through Amazon.com.
Buzz off with Lawyer Liz. Join me each week, Wednesdays at 2 o'clock, as we talk drones, Internet of Things, and technology.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show, and with us we have Jonathan McKee. Now, Jonathan, just before the break, we were actually talking about the whole privacy and should we spy on the kids as they use their phones or not. So let's dive right into that and hear about your thoughts about that.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's kind of a struggle for parents. A lot of parents are thinking, you know, what age do I get my kids' phones, you know, and when I do, how involved do I need to be? I mean, this is a real issue. I mean, this is probably an issue for you, right?
Yeah, we were just talking in the middle of the break. I have a 10-year-old, well, 10 years on Sunday, and it is that dilemma about getting a phone and teaching the responsibilities, but is he too young to get a phone? And my concerns about do I monitor him and all of those kinds of questions.
Sure. Well, and it's funny, and one of the biggest, as a matter of fact, on thesourceforparents.com, we have these youth culture window articles we write all the time, and one of the, literally a month ago, our youth culture window article was titled, you know, when should I give my kid a phone? And I've blogged about this before, because that's the question we hear all the time, what age is the age? And it's interesting, because when you look at what the experts are saying, the most experts will say either 12 or 13 years old. And the reason why, the big reason why, is because of the Children Online Privacy Protection Act, which they call COPPA, you know, nice acronym there. And the reason why is most social media doesn't actually allow young people to be on until age 13. Instagram, Snapchat, think of those are two of the most popular. Both of those, kids have to be 13 to be on those. Now, are there kids that are under 13 on those? Absolutely. Why? Because when it said, are you 13? They said, yes. So here's a dilemma for parents. If parents are letting their kids have Snapchat, their 10-year-old have Snapchat, or letting their 10-year-old have Instagram, which Instagram, for example, pretty innocent, you know, app. You take pictures, you post them. Am I saying it's, you know, great for a 10-year-old? Here's the deal. And if you're a parent and you don't know, you know, anything about any app, and most of us know about Instagram, but back in the day, parents are like, what's this Instagram? I don't even know what this is. Good thing for a parent to do is jump on a site like ours, thesourceforparents.com, and search Instagram, you know, and look, Common Sense Media has a website. Go to Google, search Instagram parents safety kids, whatever, you know, throw some keywords out there, and you'll probably end up getting an article, and what the article will tell you about any app, and here's the thing, you could ask me about an AMP right now, app, you could say, what about Kick, what about Tumblr, what about, and you could ask me anything, and by the time this, you know, by the time this interview airs, if it airs in an hour, there's going to be a new app out. So you know, I can't just give you a list of here's the good ones, here's the bad ones. But if parents do the research and look and say, you know, Instagram, safety, kids, what age, whatever, what they'll see is they'll see these articles from all kinds of experts, including Instagram itself, will usually put something out saying, okay, here's what we recommend. We recommend nobody under 13. We recommend privacy settings. That means that, you know, you have your kids set the settings on private so that only the only people that can follow them and see their pictures are people they know. And if we as parents teach them this stuff and walk through this stuff with them because we become educated, we spend the time to read the article, then we could say, okay, guess what? Here's what we found out. First of all, you're 10. You can't have Instagram. You have to be 13. Oh, Mom, all my friends have it. Yeah, well, all your friends are delinquents. So, you know, and that's where we, you know, we can tell them, sorry, you know. And guess what? You know, most experts out there will say, when your kids are young, be strict. I talked this on thesourceforparents.com. We have a work. We have a book called "Should I Smash My Kid's Phone?" And in that book, I talk about this segue from high guidance to low guidance, and it's a type of parenting. And if you were to tell me, hey, you know, what should we do with our kids and phones? The short answer is, begin with the end in mind. Know that when your kids are 18, they can move out of the house, they can join the military, they can, you know, go off to a college dorm, and they can watch what they want, they can download what they want, they can be on what apps what they want, they can chat with who they want. So we have to, from now till then, to equip them for that day when they go out on their own, whether they choose to, maybe they'll choose to stay and live in our basement for a few years. That doesn't matter. By age 18, they are adults, and they can, in this country, legally go out and make their own choices. The question is, you know, how do I get from here to there? And it better not be us controlling them till the day they leave, and then them having to figure it out all on their own for the first time the day they leave. We better start giving them opportunities to make some of these choices now. And I would even call it, I call it the segue, segueing, fading, dissolving from high guidance to low guidance. So right now, when our kid's 12, for example, we better be in their device with them, with passwords, saying, no, you're not going to download this app, you know, and when they ask us. And as they're getting older, giving them the opportunity to make these choices more. I always give parents the advice that, you know, if their kid comes up and their 13, 14-year-old says, can I have this app? Ask the kid the question back. Say, I don't know, can you? Tell me about it. And put the burden on the kid. Have the kid, well, tell me, is it safe? You know, what do the experts say about it? How old do you have to be on it? You know, there's apps out there. Vine, the age is over 13 years old. That's your homework assignment. Go look up what the age is for Vine. The reason why is they call it a little more mature. Am I saying Vine's bad? No, I'm not saying Vine's bad, but I'm just saying that we as parents need to be aware of this stuff. And if our kids come up and say, can I have Vine? Say, I don't know, what's the age requirement on it? You know? What do you think?
Exactly.
And start asking and start these conversations with them. Here we've got this Children Online Privacy Protection Act, which says, you know, don't even allow your kids under 13 on these. So most people are saying don't give your kid under 13 a smartphone. And the reason why is because an 11 or a 12-year-old really isn't equipped to know, you know, which dark corners they shouldn't walk in. And I've countless stories. I get emails all the time. I get people, they come up to me at parent workshops all the time, and those stories that are those nightmare stories you read about in the paper, I hear them all the time, where my daughter, 13 years old, was chatting with this boy that she met on this game or on this app or, I mean, name it, you know, and he was this 18-year-old boy from Huntington Beach, California, supposedly. At least that's what his picture said and what his profile said. But what they didn't know is it was some naked, hairy, 46-year-old man from Cleveland in his basement, you know. This stuff happens all the time. And young people don't realize this because parents aren't having these conversations. And parents need to teach their kids some of this stuff about, hey, if you haven't met a person face-to-face, you're not talking with them. You're not sharing information with them. You know, and I think for a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old that gets Instagram, I would say, okay, let's talk about Instagram, and I'd read. And pretty much what the experts are going to tell you is, one, that you should make sure that your kid's profile is set to private. And then I would tell my kids, yeah, you can have Instagram, but you only approve or you only friend, you know, whatever the terminology is for that particular app, the people who you've met before. And you as a parent of a 13-year-old could be like, oh, here's somebody that says they're from Montana here. When did you meet them? Oh, you didn't meet them? So you friended someone you hadn't met yet, huh? Well, you know, that's where also you need to take action.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if you know, I live in Vancouver, British Columbia, and, you know, it hit the world, the story about Amanda Todd. I don't know if you know about that, but she was 15 years old. She was cyberbullied by someone in Europe, I believe. She went on YouTube and she did a video, no words, and it was just written text, you know, like cue cards, and it was her telling her story about being bullied, and then a few days later she committed suicide. He's actually being charged and extradited, but it's all because of the phones and the internet and, you know, and you know, the cyberbullying that's going on.
Well, young people have always, I mean, back when I was in high school and junior high, I mean, it was tough because, you know, here's this, you'd go to school every day, and school was the place where you had to go and face, you know, everybody, and do I measure up? Am I good enough? Do I look good enough? Am I popular enough? And now young people have a whole other world where that happens. And it's interesting because young people have figured out that, oh, and if they don't like me for who I am, let me be who I want to be in this world. And so they'll kind of create sometimes even a different persona, all so they can be liked, you know, and it's interesting how, you know, and this happens on the smallest levels. I'm not saying that everybody on the internet is fake, not at all, but it is interesting how often you'll see people just, you know, selfies. The term selfie is a term we'd never even heard 5 years ago. And now millennials average seven to 10 selfies a week. They average almost 10 minutes each, you know, perfecting that selfie. They've added up the hours, and literally it's going to be, by the time, if selfies go on the way they're going now, they're going to have spent several years of their life perfecting selfies. You know, that's how much time selfies are taking. And it's all because young people want to be liked. There was a study I read just a couple weeks ago where they were kind of tracking young people and the desire to be liked. And there was actually a story, I want to say it was in the New York Post, of a young girl, and she, on her Instagram posts, she would usually post several per week. She'd had Instagram for several years, and then they looked at her profile, and she only had like 15, 20 pictures on it. And the person interviewing her just said, well, wait a sec, if you take several posts, you post several things a week, and you've had it for 2 years, that should be like 200 posts. How come you only have 15? She goes, because anything that I don't get at least 60 or 75 likes, I take down. So it's amazing there's in this world, if you don't get enough likes, well, forget it. Let's take it down. You know, and you could read into that if you want. You could say no big deal. You could just say, well, that's a smart, you know, she's just like a network executive. The shows that aren't good, take them down. Then that's what she's doing. But this is the world young people are growing up in, is a world where they're trying to be liked. And we as parents need to ask ourselves, are we giving them affirmation for who they are, not who they want, you know, who they wish they could be, but who they are? Are we liking them? And that doesn't mean, did you like their photos? No, there's a fine line between stalking and being that, you know, that encouraging parent. We as parents, we need to be in our kids' worlds. We need to be walking with them through this and teaching them. And I'll tell you, by the time your kid is 16, we as parents need to be more, you know, about, okay, hey, why don't you make this choice, and then let's talk and see how it works out, instead of telling them what they can do. And by the time my girls were in their senior year, I even told them, I said, my goal is that during your senior year, when you're 17 years old, that there will be no rules, that you can do what you want. Because if I haven't equipped you by then to make these choices, I'd rather you start making these choices while you're in the house than when you're in some college dorm. Because at least in the house we can talk about it. And it was funny, my girls still would come up and go, hey, can I go here? I'm like, I don't know, do you want to go there? Tell me about it, you know? I'm like, well, what do you think you should do? You know, my 12-year-old, no way, not even close. My 12-year-old, I was like, and I still would ask, well, what do you think you should do? And they go, I think I should go. I'm like, well, here's why you're not going, you know? And I would tell them, because I was way more strict when they were 12. And I told them, I said, hey, you might think I'm the strictest parent in the neighborhood right now, but let me tell you something, all your friends are going to be jealous when you're a senior, because when you're a senior, you're going to know how to make these decisions on your own, and you're going to be making these decisions on your own, and you're going to have the freedom to do that. And we're preparing you for that day.
Exactly. Well, when we come up in the next segment, we'll actually talk about your research with this new book and some more information about your ministry and other books that you've written. So we'll be right back on America's Web Radio.
Listen to America's Voice for Energy. I'm Marita Noon, and each week I'll guide our discussion on a fresh, news-based energy topic, only on America's Web Radio.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Okay, so we're back with Jonathan and talking about his new book, 52 Ways to Connect with Your Smartphone-Obsessed Kids. One of the things I wanted to ask you, Jonathan, was what do your own kids think about your research and this new book?
Good question. Well, my kids are now 18, 20, and actually 23. And so it's kind of interesting to see this because, you know, they're off to school, you know, and on their own. And now it's funny, my girls are now back for the summer here with us. So, you know, as parents, anybody who's been an empty nester parent knows that it's funny how, first of all, parenting doesn't end. You know, you think, oh, I'm done. No, you're not done. Oh, my goodness. If you look back and say, what was harder, parenting teenagers or parenting, you know, your boomerang kids, your ones that went out and then came back for the summer and then go out and come back each time? Because, oh, my gosh, now you have these, you know, you're parenting adult children. You're parenting, you know, people who have gone out and are used to doing it on their own and they're coming back. And then you're like, well, wait, well, do we have house rules? You know, if they want to come in at 3 a.m., do you let them and all that? Well, my girls are amazing. You know, they're with me here now. And it's so cool. We rarely have to tell them anything. But it is funny how sometimes there's just even little, you know, hey, can you not leave the yoga mat out in the middle of the living room? Can you put it away? And, you know, well, why? I'm just going to use it tomorrow, you know, because it's my house. Put the freaking yoga mat away. You know, I mean, it's just sometimes you're just like, ah, there's these things that happen because, you know, they're adults. They're used to doing things. If they want to leave the yoga mat out in their dorm, they do, you know. So there's that kind of dynamic constantly going on. But no, my daughters are amazing. They're gracious. They're so supportive. They've actually read several of my books. When they were younger, I would actually pay them to read because I wanted their perspective. Because I've done some devotionals for teenagers. I did this one called The Guy's Guide to God, Girls, and the Phone in Your Pocket. And it was a devotional for young guys. It was kind of a guide to guys growing up and how do you grow up and become a man of God, actually. And as a believer, that was, you know, an important book to write. And I as I was writing it, I told the girls, I'm like, hey, what do you think of the guys you meet, you know, are things that they would want to, what do you like in a guy that you think that they should know? If you could give a guy any advice. So I actually, when I was writing that, I told them, any piece of advice you give me that I use in the book, I'll give you a buck. And one of my daughters earned like 18 bucks. I mean, just was like, okay, how about this? How about this? Because she wanted money. So she came and she said, how about this one? How about this one? Because she wanted to go out and she didn't have any money. So she just sat there and just shot me ideas. And I'm sitting there furiously writing them down and stuff. I also wrote a book that hasn't come out yet. It's actually being sent out right now. It's a fictional book on a school shooting and what happens what really happens on a high school campus day to day, bullying, what's going on, and then kind of the behind the scenes look in a school shooting, but it's a fictional book. And one of my daughters read that, and she thought, I love that. That's my favorite book that you read. I hope that gets published. And so my kids can be really encouraging with that. It's kind of neat how they're, you know, how they're in that. When it comes to this book, they lived this book because this book is so much. When we talk about No Tech Tuesday, No Tech Tuesday was something that emerged out of something they did, and that was they went on a media fast. They, at their church, their youth pastor, we live up in Sacramento, and they were going to go on a missions trip down the Watts in the L.A. area, Los Angeles area, about 7 hours south of us. And to go on this missions trip, they were all required to, the youth pastor thought, hey, I like to take him kind of through a training. And one thing he wanted to train him was kind of on interaction more. And so he said, we're going to go on a media fast. And so anybody that went on a trip had to go on this media fast. No, literally phone, TV, music, anything. And he did it for a month. They were freaking out. And kids were going, I'm not going on the trip. Forget it, you know. But he then encouraged parents. He goes, and parents, I encourage you to do this with your kids because, you know, how fair is that that you're watching TV in one room and they can't, you know. So we decided to do it. We all thought he was crazy, but we decided to do it. And it changed us. I mean, it wrecked our world. It really did because, I mean, literally, it was so weird. I mean, we'd get in the car in the morning on the way to school, and I'd turn on the radio. My kids would be like, hey, Dad, you can't turn on the radio. Turn it off. I'm like, but it was Chris Tomlin. I don't care. Turn it off. You know, okay, you know. It messed us up. We were like, at night, it'd be like 7 at night, and my kids would finish their homework, and they'd come downstairs, and they'd be like, what are we going to do? You know, and we're like, let's go in the backyard and throw the ball at the dog, you know, and we just, I mean, we played family board games. We did, because there was no entertainment, media, or technology, and it changed us. I mean, we sat around laughing and talking. You know, we'd light a fire, you know, in the living room, which was really weird because we didn't have a fireplace. And no, I'm kidding, we did. But you know, we would just have a fun, you know, family time together, just hanging around. Well, something happened when we were done with that. We're like, that was so good. We want to keep doing it, but we didn't want to do it every day. We're not crazy. So we established No Tech Tuesdays in our house. And basically when kids got home on Tuesday, it wasn't all day. It was more no tech afternoon and evening Tuesdays, because pretty much when they got home, they'd go do their homework, and then if they needed to use technology for, you know, they needed to use a computer to write a paper or whatever, they did. But then tech was turned off, and Tuesday nights was just not just no tech at the table like every night. It was just no tech at all. So usually what would end up happening is there'd be a fire lit, and we'd all be sitting around reading, you know, if the kids finished their homework, sometimes a board game, sometimes just talking. And it was amazing how conversation just ended up happening. That's why I included that in the book, because it was just one of those catalysts of conversation. And I remember one specific time, I think I mentioned this book, I can't remember, under the No Tech Tuesday tactic, where we were sitting around, and it was when my oldest two were out of the house, and it was just my youngest daughter, and she was sitting there on the floor in front of the fire. Her favorite place was right in front of the fireplace. And she was sitting there. The dog's in the corner just chewing on a bone. She's sitting there doing homework. My wife and I are sitting there reading. And it's totally quiet. And my daughter from college calls. And we answer. And we're like, Alyssa, what's going on? She's like, what are you guys doing? And we're like, oh, you know, No Tech Tuesday. And she says, oh, No Tech Tuesday. I miss No Tech Tuesdays. We should have done that more often. And I remember thinking, who'd have thunk it that a young person would actually think, I wish I had more nights without technology. Now, I want to remind her that, you know, when now she's sitting there just staring at her phone all the time. But you know, it's like it was this thing that really was kind of the sacred thing in her house. And so they, you know, it was moments like that kind of inspired me to say, okay, here's some moments that worked around my house. Here's some moments that parents shared that worked around their house. What moments work in your house? So it's fun to talk about those settings and those venues.
So with your, you know, your 50 ways to connect, how did you keep coming up those ideas, you know, keep it from becoming redundant?
Yeah, no, you're right, because, I mean, and that's a great question, because you got 52 ideas, and the idea is that so many, you know, kids are different and all that. You've got to come up with these different ideas. Well, each of these ideas presents kind of unique characteristics and advice. And it's funny that even though some of them are similar, I shared with you the two-player mode, sitting down with your kid and playing video games. Well, that's really similar to other ones where you use technology. I have one called the Netflix binge bonding, where you sit down with your kid and instead of saying, get off Netflix, instead go, hey, what you watching? Parks and Rec? Oh, I've never seen that. Can I watch it with you? You know, now both those use technology to connect with your kids, but at the same time, they also have very unique characteristics. And my goal is that I'm hoping that, you know, with various kids with various tastes, that's going to help, you know, that's going to help them. For example, there's some that might involve a late night splurge or taking your kid frozen yogurt, and that might sound really similar to, you know, if I've got one about, you know, I talk about observing your kids, and if your son really likes sports, taking him to that sports bar and getting wings or whatever. Well, what's the difference between taking a girl to yogurt and taking a young man to sports bar? Again, your kids' tastes are going to vary, and some of these, you know, kids are going to be unique in taste and temperament, and the more ideas you have in your arsenal, the better. And one thing I tried to do is with each of these ideas, I tried to present kind of unique advice. So if, you know, if you're with your daughter in this mode, do this. If you're with your son, do this. So each one I tried to offer unique advice. So if there's one that's talking about a certain type of food and another's another type of food, and one's a certain type of technology and another's another type of technology, with each I tried to give a new step of advice so that by the time someone's done reading all 52, they'll say, okay, hey, man, I immediately know 16 of these that I could use next week. And here's some great tips I can use, you know, as well as things like I told you about the yes factor. Right. I'm going to say yes next time my daughter does. So, you know, that's what I tried to do. And I don't know, you read the book. What do you think? Do you think it helped?
Oh, hugely. I loved it. I mean, there were so many varieties. And it was even causing me to think of, you know, 53, 54, 55. So I was even coming up with a whole bunch of other ideas. So it got that creative juices going for me with my son. So when you talk about giving the keys, for an example, my son, he loves cars. So we've just got him into go-karting, but giving him the keys was allowing him to go on the adult track. Even though he's 10 years old, he's really good at responsible at driving go-karts. It's like, okay, you're tall enough. I think you're mature enough. Go for it. Go on the adult track. And you know what? He's beating the men, adult men, around the track. So for us, it's an hour's drive to get to this place, but he's not engaged with that tablet or that screen. So really opened up a lot of ideas for me.
Well, and that's so cool because, I mean, you know, your world looks much different than my world and during, and so many of our, you know, I mean, think of the thousands of listeners listening and what their world looks like. And for them, you know, I mean, you grew up in, you know, Podunk, South Dakota compared to, you know, New York City or you know, in Chicago or whatever. It's going to be different, you know, and I can write about something that yogurt. And, you know, and maybe you're like, you know, what's the big deal with yogurt, you know, up there in Canada where you are? You're like, let's get a Timmy's, eh? You know, I mean, so whatever it is, wherever you are, you know, you're going to notice things in your kid's world that I didn't even write about. But hopefully you'll take these truths of, you know, noticing your kid, saying yes to these opportunities, finding these moments where they naturally look up and maximizing those. And if they aren't looking up, creating moments where they do, where their hands are busy, you know, finding moments where they're in technology. How can I join them in that technology? So I'm hoping that those principles will transcend and aren't limited to a mere yogurt shop, you know.
Exactly. Now, where can people purchase your new book?
Well, if you're up there in Canada, at Amazon.ca. If you're in America, Amazon.com. Or you could jump on to thesourceforparents.com. And if you go to thesourceforparents.com, you'll see tons of free articles for parents, our Youth Culture Window articles. There's a big old subscribe button there, too. It's all free. You can grab and subscribe to all those free articles. But there's also a little link there to all my books, and you can look through my 20 books. And we have Parent Pack with all my parent books, you name it. If you go to Amazon, you'll see if you type in the 52 ways to connect with your smartphone-obsessed kid, or you type in my name, Jonathan McKee, you'll see my author page, and you can see all the books that are written there, and you have access to them all.
Yeah, and it's The Source, and it's number 4 for parents.com, okay?
Yep.
We've come to the end of the show already. Time has flown by. So if anybody wants to get a hold of Jonathan, again, you can go to his website, The Source, www.forparents.com. If you want to have any additional information, we will be posting also this podcast download and links to Jonathan's website and other links that he may have onto coolprojects.com, and you'll actually see some pictures and have some great links to him. In the meantime, I want to thank everyone for listening to this wonderful show. Jonathan, thank you for coming to the show. It was amazing. I will be adding more ideas as well as doing these 52 ways to connect to my child. And thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye for now.
This is America's Web Radio.com.